that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the...
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, May 26th through the 29th at various locations throughout North and Northeast Portland. The second annual Vanport Mosaic Festival will offer an exploration of the history and legacy of Vanport through a series of films and plays, lectures and conversations, and guided tours. Audiences will be invited to reflect upon the journeys of those who lived and died in the city of Vanport. As part of the festival, there will be screenings of a selection of Vanport oral histories. Again, that's the Vanport Mosaic Festival, May 26th through the 29th, at various locations throughout North and Northeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and it's our membership drive. Hope you all are taking part in that and doing what you can to help our great radio station. Coming up on KBOO this morning at 10 is Chris Andre, hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on stage and studio, Dime Roberts welcomes Grimm star Reggie Lee, who's returning to the stage as Sancho Panza in Man of La Mancha. At 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan looks at the Portland Art Museum's retrospective Quest for Beauty, the architecture, landscapes, and collections of John Yeon. And coming up now at 9 o'clock is Alternative Radio. The history and politics of Saudi Arabia are broken down by scholar Madawi al-Rashid.
Saudi Arabia is probably the country that is most supported by the U.S. The U.S. maintains a military presence in the Gulf that is ready to move and mobilize in case there is a threat to the oil fields. Also, Saudi Arabia is severely divided internally between tribal groups, and now, because of the sectarianization between Sunni and Shia, ideologically between liberal-minded Saudis and Islamists, and therefore this fragmentation prevents the development of national politics.
That's Madawi al-Rashid, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Madawi al-Rashid on Saudi Arabia, history and politics. Saudi Arabia is a quixotic ally of the United States, to say the least. 15 of the 19 9/11 hijackers were from the Desert Kingdom. In the wake of the attack, the U.S. flew Saudi elites out of the country and then proceeded to invade Afghanistan, though no Afghans were involved in 9/11. You figure it out. Saudi Arabia has supported extremist jihadi groups from Pakistan to Syria. In the 1980s, it bankrolled the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, who later morphed into the Taliban. When the latter seized power in the 1990s, Saudi Arabia was quick to recognize the new rulers in Kabul. Torture, hangings, and an atrocious human rights record have required Washington to engage in verbal acrobatics to justify its backing of the oil-rich Riyadh regime. Saudi Arabia is a feudal and closed system. How long can it last? Our guest today is Madawi al-Rashid, a leading scholar on Saudi Arabia. She's visiting professor at the Middle East Center at the London School of Economics, and she has taught at King's College in London. She's the author of A History of Saudi Arabia and A Most Masculine State. I talked with her at the University of Denver. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Saudi Arabia is an old land, but a relatively new country. How did its formation come about in the early 1930s?
Saudi Arabia is a recent country, a recent government that came out of the First World War when part of the Arabian Peninsula was under the Ottoman Empire that collapsed after the First World War, and Britain inherited that region as it fell within its sphere of influence when the British and the French were dividing the territory that had been part of the Ottoman Empire. So Britain, together with local forces, mainly the Al Saud and their allies, the Wahhabis, the religious interpretation that we know today as a radical Salafi movement, they came together under the sponsorship of Britain, and Saudi Arabia was created, and it was given the name the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in 1932. Then it was recognized as an independent country, but Britain remained sort of overlooking the affairs of Arabia until it was displaced by the United States during the Second World War. And with the discovery of oil, Saudi Arabia became almost like a satellite kingdom for the U.S.
And what is the structure of power? Who rules?
Saudi Arabia is an absolute monarchy. There is a king and a crown prince and a deputy crown prince. Unfortunately, the country doesn't have any institutions that represent the people. So there is no elected parliament or national assembly like other Gulf countries. It's an absolute monarchy. The king holds so many powers, and he rules with his son and nephew. So in the absence of any kind of national representation for the people, we can say that it is an absolute monarchy.
And getting back to the imperial settlement after World War I and the emergence of several countries in the Middle East, newly created countries, Lord Curzon was a former viceroy of India and the British Foreign Secretary after World War I. He said, speaking of British power, "We need an Arab facade ruled and administered under British guidance and controlled by a native Mohammedan and as far as possible an Arab staff. There should be no actual incorporation of the conquered territory in the dominions of the conqueror, but the absorption may be veiled by such constitutional fictions as a protectorate, a sphere of influence, a buffer state, and so on."
That's pretty accurate description of what the intent of the Brits were at the time. And it's a colonial policy that came under the disguise of indirect rule or a mandate or a protectorate. And there is this myth that Saudi Arabia has never been colonized. And even the current regime says that we had always been an independent country. We've never been colonized. But that's not true. Colonization came in different guises, from the settlers' colonization, where the imperial power brings some population, make them live there. This happened in South Africa, in Australia, and other countries. And there is the French style. But in Arabia, because of the sensitivity of having British troops or imperial troops on the ground early in the 20th century, as Saudi Arabia is the host of two holy cities that were important for British Muslims. And the Brits actually worried more about Muslims in India, who were more in number than any other Muslims. And as Britain controlled India, they didn't want to antagonize those Indian Muslims. And therefore, they did not have troops on the ground. But also, let's not forget, Arabia at the time didn't really offer much of an incentive for any foreign power to bring its troops there, because there were no resources. It's an arid zone. The only resource before the oil was the pilgrimage to Mecca and Medina, in which thousands of Muslims participated and came every year. So any government that controlled these two holy cities could impose an entry tax on the pilgrims, and that's how Saudi Arabia emerged. When Ibn Saud expanded, his main project was to conquer Mecca and Medina and make them Saudi territories so he could have access to the taxes, the income from the pilgrimage, and also to have the Islamic credentials as the guardian of the two holy mosques.
That's really central to Saudi power, being the custodian of the two holy sites at Mecca and Medina.
Yes, absolutely. And they built their legitimacy on the basis that these two holy cities are under their jurisdiction, and therefore they should not be contested by any Muslim country. Even these Muslim countries are more, in terms of their population, there are countries that are triple the size of Saudi Arabian population. So they built this reputation, and also it meant that the Saudi regime tries to reach out to other Muslims through support, charity, aid, and also the export of its Wahhabi Islam. And they think by doing that, they are seeking legitimacy in the eyes of Muslims as far as Indonesia.
Talk about this cleric, Muhammad Abdul Wahhab, lived in the 18th century. What was his background, and how did Wahhabism emerge as central to the Saudi theology?
Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab was a cleric who lived in Central Arabia. It's one of the most isolated regions in Arabia. And his movement, called the Wahhabi movement, is part of a family of reformist movements that sprung everywhere in the Arab world and the Muslim world beyond Arab territories. These revivalist movements thought that Muslims are backward and their countries were beginning to be integrated in imperial sort of worlds that are run by non-Muslims. So they thought that if they reformed the practices of Muslims, if they brought Muslims to an early form, pristine Islam, then there is a hope for salvation. So initially, Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab was concerned with going around the villages in the Central Arabia, telling everybody that you should not practice your religion like that, you shouldn't pray like this, you shouldn't visit this tomb, you shouldn't seek intercession from saints who could act on your behalf with God. So he was trying to reform people's practices. But then the project took a very political turn when it was adopted by the Al Saud rulers of a particular town in Arabia called Diriyah. And they saw an opportunity to use that religious revivalist movement to spread their rule over other territories outside their little town. And this is exactly what they did, because if they spread their authority beyond their town, they could tax the population and impose on them Islamic tax. And this Islamic tax would actually end up in their coffers. So they struck a deal with Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, saying that we will help you spread your specific version of Islam, but you have to leave the political affairs and the taxes for us. And he was happy to do that. And since the mid-18th century, we have this bizarre relationship between the Al-Saud and the descendant of Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, what is called today the religious establishment of Saudi Arabia. They support each other. Sometimes they come in conflict with each other, but most of the time they enforce each other's privileges and rule.
You describe the clergy in Saudi Arabia as overprivileged.
They're absolutely overprivileged, especially the loyalists among them, those who tell the population that you must obey the rulers. And if you demonstrate, you're actually committing a sin against God. If you criticize the king, you are undermining his authority and you're committing a sin. And therefore, we are here into sort of divine right of kings to rule. So the Wahhabis are very privileged as a result of preaching those kind of messages, and they are rewarded by having institutions created for them. They run the mosques, they preach, they are on the government's payroll.
Is Wahhabism and Salafism interchangeable, or do you make a distinction between the two?
Now, the people we call Wahhabis don't like to be called Wahhabis. They prefer to be called Muslims, and they think Wahhabi, the name Wahhabi, is a negative connotation because it means that they are followers of Muhammad Abdul Wahhab. They believe that they are just the true Muslims and the only true Muslims. Others have a lesser Islam or not a perfect one. And Salafis is a much older trend in Islam. It started in medieval time, and it was associated by a scholar called Ahmed ibn Hanbal, who lived in Baghdad, and he was trying to go back to the original text. It's almost like a fundamentalist movement that wanted to go back to the original text and offer literal interpretation of the Quran and the tradition of the Prophet, and not allow a lot of reasoning in understanding these ancient texts. So that is the Salafi movement. But the Saudis in the 20th century did not want to be called Wahhabis. They wanted to be called Salafis or pure Muslims, because that gives them credibility beyond Arabia. So Muslims in India, Muslims in Indonesia, or anywhere in the world, by dropping the word Wahhabi, it makes the Saudi look as if they are actually the heirs of the true Islam.
Well, isn't that interesting? And how many things have I learned, I wonder, over the last 20 years by listening to David Barsamian? And here he is on KBOO Portland. Good morning. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm here with...
Fortunato from the Monday Sampler. And we're here to ask you to call us up and become a member of Community Radio, KBOO Portland. And that's easy. We just call... What's that number?
877-500-5266. And I'd like to shout out especially to those of you who have restraint, those of you who are not just going to rush the first time you hear a plea and go for it. No, you've been holding out for more than a week now. And so I'd like to congratulate you on thinking things over carefully. And now that you've thought it over, why don't you give us a call, 877-500-5266, because you're the sort of person who understands that it's those who have community in their hearts, people who understand that they live in a community and are part of it, those are the ones that pull along the rest. And so I'm proud to say that 10% of our listeners actually join.
Now, we want to give some thank yous for some folks who called us up during the last programming. I got here late, but Lisa Loving has been going around here with a giant plate of waffles. I don't know what that's all about. But we'd like to thank Dave in North Portland, who's a new member. A renewing member is Con in Southeast.
You got me. I can't read that one either.
And Paula, who is calling from Buckeye, Arizona.
Awesome.
To renew her membership in Community Radio.
All right. So, Arizona represent.
Yeah. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. We're going to be back. But we want to get back to the program that you tune in here every Tuesday. This is Alternative Radio, and it's a very interesting subject. You know, let's explain some things. Let's see what's actually going on here, right?
Right. Yes, indeed. And that's what you can count on David Barsamian for. The number 877-500-5266, the person you, yes, you, and the time is right now, because you know you'll forget if you don't. And back to programming.
Oil is discovered in Saudi Arabia, and U.S. becomes very interested in the country. In fact, there's a State Department document which calls the oil of Saudi Arabia a stupendous source of strategic power and one of the greatest material prizes in world history, probably the richest economic prize in the world in the field of foreign investment. And so the U.S. gets its hands on Saudi oil, and there was a meeting, a fateful meeting in 1945 in the Suez Canal, where Ibn Saud meets President Franklin D. Roosevelt on a U.S. warship, the Quincy. What happened there that is of importance?
What happened was that the U.S. formalized its relationship with Saudi Arabia. The relationship started first by the oil company that that began the search for oil. But after oil was discovered in commercial quantities in 1938, it was the oil company from Texas that drew the American government into Saudi Arabia, because they wanted protection for the oil fields, which became extremely important for the U.S., especially during the Second World War. So there, in addition to the oil, there was the geostrategic location of Saudi Arabia, as the U.S. acquired a military base very close to the oil field, which was used at the time for a stopover on the way to the Far East during the Second World War. But In addition to oil and security, we find that recently there was this element that the Saudi regime is actually an ally of the U.S. in the war against terror. So they claim that the Saudi shares intelligence with the U.S. and other Western government, for example, the British one, and the relationship must stay intact, and the special or the so-called special relationship should be maintained at all cost.
Just to back up a little bit, in 1943, Franklin D. Roosevelt said the defense of Saudi Arabia is vital to the defense of the United States. And the deal apparently that was struck was that the U.S. oil companies would have exclusive access to the Saudi oil fields, excluding the British and the French.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the deal. In return for protecting the oil fields, the Saudis were not allowed to negotiate with any other international oil corporation, and there was a monopoly until the 1980s when Saudi Arabia regained Aramco, the Saudi oil company, and reverted to the in its ownership to the Saudis. But American expertise, American personnel continued to dominate the oil industry in Saudi Arabia, in addition to the defense industry that the Saudis started. So Saudi Arabia today buys most of its arms, weapons, airplanes from the United States, although in later years they tried to diversify by some of this this armament from Europe and also China and beyond.
In 2015, King Abdullah dies and is succeeded by Salman. What is he like? What do you know of him? Is he any kind of a reform-minded leader?
Well, King Salman is a traditional patriarch, a monarch, who is interested in ensuring the survival of the Al Saud dynasty at all cost. He, under his rule, many human rights activists and people who were actually campaigning for greater freedoms, for lifting the ban on driving when it comes to women's rights, for establishing civil society, even those who called for constitutional monarchy using peaceful means, like writing petitions, were put in prison. And King Salman continued the tradition of King Abdullah by keeping them in prison. He has not pardoned anybody. And the repression in Saudi Arabia under King Salman continues.
Now, there's something unusual in, many things are unusual about Saudi Arabia, but this religious, so-called religious police, and it sounds like almost an Orwellian term, the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice. These, and you've written about this, these government-appointed moral vigilantes parade the streets in luxurious white four-wheel drives in search of immorality, enforcing gender separation laws, making sure that all shops are closed during prayer times and that men and women dress modestly at all times.
Yes, it is translated in English as religious police. The interesting thing is King Salman, just recently, he passed a royal decree that limited their ability to arrest people, chase women in the streets. And this was done in order to promote this image that Saudi Arabia now is a neoliberal economy, and it is basically promoting a consumer sort of citizenship, that you have to go to shopping center, feel free to shop without harassment by the religious police. Yet they still keep the tradition of telling people to close their shops when it's prayer times. And the interesting thing, this royal decree came into being exactly at the same time as ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, was following the path of Saudi Arabia and imposing these kind of restrictions on the people who came under their authority. So there were so many common grounds between ISIS and Saudi Arabia, at least at this level, which prompted King Salman to ban the religious police from following people until they are authorized by the real police. So it's interesting parallels to see that the only time when the king actually limited the powers of of the religious police is when ISIS was beginning to follow the same pattern and imposing these restrictions on its own, the people who came under its control in Mosul and Raqqa, for example.
And in terms of women's rights, gender issues, what about divorce and property?
Saudi Arabia applies Islamic law in the case of personal issues such as marriage, divorce, and inheritance, like all Arab and Muslim countries. When it comes to personal status law, they apply Sharia, which is Islamic law. However, Saudi Arabia applies the most restrictive interpretation of Islamic law in matters related to personal affairs. So women find it very, very difficult to divorce, because divorce remains the prerogative of men. And Saudi judges, who are all male, of course, are sympathetic to a male version of the Islamic tradition. And the women have a very hard time getting divorced. And if they do get divorced, usually they find it very difficult to get custody over their children and also maintenance from their ex-husband, especially if they are looking after the children. So the problem does not lie in Islamic law itself. It is in the interpretation of Islamic law, especially when a country adopts the most restrictive interpretation.
Well, here we are again, and you're listening to Alternative Radio this morning on KBOO Portland. This is Fortunato and Teresa.
Teresa Mitchell right here.
Yeah, and we want to ask you, do you really think you should continue listening for free to KBOO without becoming a member, right?
Well, if you like it, if it's useful to you, then why not kick down? It's only fair. It's only fair. And so many people do, and you'll be joining 10% of the listeners. And I just want to know, are you among the 10% who have that? Now, let me be honest about this. Not everybody's got the dough. Not everybody's got enough to make it through the month and feed the kids. For you, we're here for you. We're not expecting you to kick down. But if you're doing okay, and you know you got that extra $25 a month, I would like to ask you to call us right now to spend 3 minutes on the phone. This is the extent of your commitment. And this is a commitment that, in these Trumpian days, I hope leads towards revolution. I will never stop pushing for that myself. And David Barsamian also has his long game in getting that information out to you. He cares. He gets the information as accurately as he can with the best interviews, and he's done that incredible job for all these years. You can join that. You can be a part of that now. You can move towards a better world by calling us 877-500-5266. And speaking of a better world, it's mighty warm in Cascadia today, but you know, if you look at the forecast, it's going to be like 48 degrees tonight. And when you get out from the club after seeing your favorite band in your shorts and your t-shirt, you're going to wish you had a hoodie. And well, great luck. Yeah. We happen to have a hoodie that we'd love to give to you. And for $25 a month, you can get the KBOO hoodie with the red logo on the front and nothing in the back. And it's very luxurious, and it'll warm you up, or it will stay just cool enough because, heck, it's a zip-up hoodie. And what's right. more appropriate for Portland weather than that, right, Fortunato?
Oh, man, we're going through what's this May summer teaser. It's not summer. It's just a practice. An amazing lifelike simulation of summer. Yeah. And the weather will get back to normal. And, it'll you know, beach, but through the whole year, you know, thousands of people like there out around the Portland area listen to the newscast, and they make it part of their day. And, you know, subscribing to KBOO, it's inclusive. It's not like you're watching TV and there's an ad and you get that. But, you know, here we're asking you to support this program. That you show that you support alternative radio that comes on this Tuesdays. And that's a way to say, you know, how popular these shows are. And it also shows your support for programs that you like by calling us up at 877-500-5266. We used to have a DJ here named George Page, and he would say, back what you believe in. And if you like listening to KBOO like you do right now, you should step up and pick up the phone and become a member. We can work out an easy cashectomy from your checking account, and that'll be accommodating. Some people even like bring in bags of pop bottles. You know, they can do that plan too. But actually, the plan with your bank account really helps. You know, it's automatic. On our books, it shows that, you know, someone's like pledging $60, but it's just going to be, what, $5 a month for that.
True that. And I think that you'll enjoy having the hoodie. But the thing is, when you join, you suddenly, it kind of turns your head around and focuses your attention, because you're actually moving some of your cash over to our account every month. And when you do that, you start thinking things. You ask people who have already joined, and they will tell you that you start kind of paying attention to stuff like, say, I wonder what's on the schedule. So you pull up KBOO.fm, right, and you look at the schedule, and you see all these amazing and wonderful things. I mean, for me, if I get insomnia in the middle of the night, 3 or 4 a.m., I want to tune in KBOO, because that's going to be the most interesting thing on the air. And sometimes it's the most bizarre thing on the air, but I kind of want that, you know, and KBOO's got that going on. But we have public affairs in the morning, and that's why you're listening right now. I think that you will be glad that you dialed 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266. And we'd love to hear that phone ring. You can ring right now. We need to get another 10 people to call in before the top of the hour, and you can be one of those people. Right,
we'll,
now is the time.
We'll be back to talk more, because, you know, when you become a member of KBOO, there's all sorts of other things that go on. You start voting on the board of directors. We have other places around town have some sort of special deals for KBOO members. So it's a lot more than just supporting the radio. We like try and give some stuff back. We've got a lot of thank you gifts that you can arrange here with the folks, which when you call us up at 877-500-5266. Shall we get back to it? Yes.
A few years ago, there was a bit of a brouhaha about women driving. What is the status of that? Can women drive cars in Saudi Arabia?
Absolutely not. And with the advent of the internet and social media, a lot of Saudi women have started campaigns and hashtags wanting to drive. The virtual campaign attracts a lot of sympathizers, but if women dare to practice what they want, and that is taking their cars for a drive, they immediately get arrested. So we still have the ban on driving.
The Daily Telegraph in Britain reports that women are required to limit the amount of time spent with men to whom they are not related. The majority of public buildings, including offices, banks, and universities, have separate entrances for the different sexes. Public transportation, parks, beaches, and amusement parks are also segregated in most parts of the country. Unlawful mixing will lead to a criminal charge being brought against both parties, but women typically face harsher punishments. Are those descriptions accurate?
They are accurate, but also they're not at the same time. So in general, there are restrictions on where women can be. For example, you can't work with a man in an office. But there are pockets and enclaves in the country where mixing takes place. Take, for example, the Kingdom Holding, which is the company of Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, the entrepreneur. In his company, men and women mix freely. Take another example. King Abdullah started a university called King Abdullah University for Science and Technology, and from the very beginning, it's a mixed college. In hospitals, men and women work together, and there are women nurses. Most of them tend to be non-Saudis, but it is allowed. And therefore, we have this hypocrisy that we are a Muslim country. We don't allow men and women who are unrelated to mix together. But at the same time, there are these pockets of mixing between the sexes that the government keeps a blind eye on and don't bother to investigate. But it actually depends on who we are talking about. If you're wealthy, you're able to have security guards guarding the entrance to your office in the private sector. You're not going to get the religious police to harass you inside. And in fact, if you are a prince, you make sure that they do not set a foot in your company's building. But if you are an ordinary citizen, you know, you want to just go in the cafe in Saudi Arabia, sit and have a cup of coffee, and happen to just like exchange a word with a man, you might actually get arrested.
There are millions of foreign workers in Saudi Arabia, and there's, you know, reports coming out about abuse and rape and people not getting paid and they're being beaten and the like. What is known about the foreign workers, where they're from, and their numbers?
Saudi Arabia has approximately 9 million foreign workers. Some of them are very privileged Western expats who work in very highly well-paid jobs. But the majority of them are either Arabs who work in middle management or Asian and African labor. Their situation is precarious. The government can get rid of them anytime. They can be deported easily. They do not have the right to establish their unions. And recently, with the decline in oil prices, we find a lot of construction workers in the private sector are not paid their salaries because the companies have lost contracts with the government and they can't pay their employees. So this one stay in the country for a couple of months because the employer keeps their passports. You cannot leave Saudi Arabia without the permission of your sponsor. And sometimes they went to the streets and demonstrated and went on strike because they weren't paid. So what happens is the government cooperates with the private sector. They just put them on planes and ship them back to their country.
And are all of these 9 million foreign workers Muslim?
It's a mixture. There are some who come from the Philippines who are obviously not Muslim, but there are also Chinese immigrants, and some of them are Muslim from Bangladesh, Pakistan, and other countries in the Muslim world or Africa.
To go back to the post-World War II period where this alliance solidifies between Washington and Riyadh, it seems that beyond oil, which was a primary concern, of course, for the U.S., there was this fervent anti-communism as well as any kind of Arab independent nationalist movement.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia was a key ally of the U.S. during the Cold War, and both countries wanted to defeat the Soviet Union and also defeat the threatening or what they called subversive ideologies such as socialism, communism, and Arab nationalism. Ironically, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia mobilized Muslims by deploying the Wahhabi tradition and as an antidote to these sort of secular ideologies. So if the belief was that if people went back to Islam, were preoccupied with being good Muslims, then they wouldn't actually fall into the trap of being attracted to the godless communists or even secular Arab nationalists. So Saudi Islam served a purpose during the Cold War, and it was spread by the Saudi regime using petrodollar to places as far as London, Jakarta, and even in the U.S. So it was that moment when we see a lot of mosques and charities sponsored by the Saudis spreading around the globe, spreading also this Wahhabi tradition.
KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm here with Fortunato, and we're here to ask you to join up. Congratulations for holding off for the entire week and a half, but we're almost done with the pledge drive, and it's time to get your pledge to actually support the station. The way you do it is to call us up, make the phone ring, make us feel great. We need another 8 people to call in right now, and you'll be joining so many people, and actually Fortunato has a list.
Well, we've got Stephanie. She's a new member, and she's calling from Washougal, Washington.
Washougal represent.
I thought there was there's a new Washougal?
I know. It's something I could almost believe. You could convince me with all the condos going up that there's going to be a new Washougal. Not yet.
Right, the old Washougal's worn out, and we've put in a new one.
So if you call 877-500-5266, you'll be joining people who've already called. We already mentioned, but I just have to say, because there's so many J's in this, Joan, Jose, Jay, Jen actually all called in earlier. So you can join the four
parts of town.
So. I know, but you can call from you can join the four J's and call us up, 877-500-5266. I'd like to suggest that you designate a $25 bill. I know it doesn't exist, but you can make it up in your mind. It's all electrons.
And make the electrons put two bills together.
Yeah, if you that'll work. If you have $25 in your account right now, and you care about improving the world that you live in, you care about KBOO, well, you'll have it next month. So why not call us right now and get yourself a hoodie, because you don't have a hoodie and you're going to need one when you get out of the club tonight and you realize it's 48 degrees and you've still got your shorts on. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. The person to call is you, and the time to do it is right now. We need that 876-54321 callers to call in and allow us to make our goal, and we are moving towards the goal.
You know, today's program that we're listening to, all this information about Saudi Arabia, this is going to be one of these situations where either you or a friend is going to say, hey, I was listening to KBOO, and they were talking about this and situations. You know, this is what happens. Like, people find good information on KBOO that they relate to others. And sometimes you're just listening so much you don't even realize that you're listening. And we need you to support the station so we can continue to present these programs, like Alternative Now, which is a tape program. I believe comes from it's not Pacifica, but it's, or do we do it here? I don't know. But either we produce programs here. We also have programs, you know, like Democracy Now, and then there's other shows that we pay for to put on the air to, you know, spread a little mental itching powder and give some information out there.
Oh, yeah, I think this information is absolutely essential. I mean, it's essential to understand that Saudi Arabia is about Wahhabism, and it's about these fools who were put into power by the British and Americans and the oil companies, and who operate a royalty of all things in the 21st century. It's disgusting, and I hate to say that as, you know, Jim Crow mass extermination state American, but Saudi Arabia is disgusting, and of course they're our major partner. Of course Trump goes there first and bows before the king. 877
We won't even get in about the orb.
5266, so. The orb.
877-500-5266, the orb.
I remember Noam Chomsky telling me about the Muslim Brotherhood, that it was also a social welfare organization providing services that the state, the Egyptian state, would not or could not provide, literacy programs, training, and health clinics and the like.
Yes, the Muslim Brotherhood is unique among Islamist groups in the sense that it combined its role as a preaching forum. It combined that with being also a charity organization with a huge network of hospitals and schools. It also penetrated trade unions in a country like Egypt, among professionals, lawyers, doctors, etc., but also as a political party. So these three dimensions made the Muslim Brotherhood threatening for a regime like Saudi Arabia. And they distinguished themselves by pursuing these kind of three paths from other Islamists, such as, for example, Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda doesn't think or didn't think of itself as a charity or a preaching community of preachers. It was embedded in an armed struggle against, you know, so many enemies, the West, the Arab regimes, and every Muslim who didn't conform to their way of being Muslim. So the unique tradition of the Muslim Brotherhood was threatening, and this is why the Saudis put their weight behind Sisi and are happy now to develop closer military and financial relations with him, although the relationship can sometime have a troubled moment.
Saudi Arabia was a long time, at least on a rhetorical level, a champion for Palestinian rights. How has that changed in recent years? Because it seems to have been quite modified.
Since the Arab uprising, I think the Arab-Israeli conflict, or the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, to put it more accurately, had been sidelined. It is no longer the main preoccupation of the Arab population or the regimes. Each regime is now preoccupied with its survival. We have an authoritarian system that's spreading across the Arab world and beyond to that, in Europe, in the West itself. And therefore, there are serious economic problems in countries like Egypt and North Africa, in addition to Saudi Arabia itself. An oil-based economy is suffering in Saudi Arabia because of the collapse of oil prices. So the Saudis may make noises about the peace process, but there isn't really an effort to push for peace or for more rights to the Palestinians.
And there have been reports that Saudi Arabia has made overtures with Israel based on their mutual antipathy toward Iran.
Absolutely. We've heard these reports, and jokingly, some people think that Israel has become a Sunni ally of Saudi Arabia. We don't know the degree to which the two countries are working together, but my guess is that there had been some meetings that were publicized, not by the Saudis. Unfortunately for the Saudis, we hear about those meetings from the Israeli press.
Iqbal Ahmed was a great Pakistani intellectual and anti-imperialist, and he often reminded audiences here in the U.S. and Europe and Canada that there were two kinds of jihad. You only hear about one kind here, the militant, aggressive type of jihad, but there's another type of jihad in Islam.
Absolutely. There are so many interpretations of jihad, but at the moment, the whole world think that there is only one armed struggle is the jihad that Muslims are engaged in. But that's not true. In Islamic tradition, we have a rich body of knowledge about scholars who wrote about jihad as a struggle to maintain good life, moral life, as a struggle also to defend yourself. You defend your property, which is an obligation in Islam, like it is recognized in international law. If somebody invades your country, you are under the obligation to actually defend your borders. So there are multiple meanings of jihad, but unfortunately, in the present context of the volatile life in the Middle East, we find that jihad is reduced to this particular type of jihad. And unfortunately, it has become synonymous with terrorism.
Sometimes I make the analogy that Saudi Arabia is akin to the Walton family that owns Walmart. It's like a privately run family business. Do you give any credibility to that?
I think it is a private corporation with multiple princes having shares in it. It is run secretly with minimum participation from society. There are no institutions that allow Saudis to decide on policy, even when it comes to economics. The recent announcement that was made by the Deputy Crown Prince Mohammed ibn Salman, he called his economic reform program Vision 2030. It came top down. And also it was a blueprint that was constructed, imagined by a management consultancy firm from outside Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a closed system. The only people who can decide on important matters are a coterie of important senior princes.
Why is Saudi Arabia in the war in Yemen?
The Saudi regime started this war in order to absorb the shock of its failure in the Arab world from Beirut to Baghdad. Saudi Arabia had seen its sphere of influence and acumen among those countries or important elite in those countries shrink in the past sort of 5 years. And also, it saw the expansion of the Iranian influence. And therefore, the Saudi king began to lose his credibility in the eyes of his own local audiences, that he wasn't doing anything. After all, he's supposed to defend Muslims and Sunni Muslim in particular, but he wasn't able to do anything about it. And that was during King Abdullah. But in 2015, when King Abdullah passed away, Salman wanted to come and show how masculine and militaristic he is, that Saudi Arabia is serious, tough, and it's going to fight the Iranians in their backyard in Yemen. And this is why he announced Decisive Storm, which was the name given to his war on Yemen, unfortunately, the poorest Arab country. And so far, since 2015, there are 10,000 people, civilians, who had died as a result of this bombing and the fighting that went in Yemen, according to the United Nations sources. So he also adopted or began to be referred to in the local press as the King of Decisiveness. Compare that, the King of Decisiveness, to King Abdullah, who before was known as the King of Humanity. So the King of Humanity gave way to the King of Decisiveness. That's bringing out all this masculine militaristic traits and show how tough he is despite his old age.
And Yemen, again, in the media, is reduced to Shia-Sunni conflict.
That's absolutely irrelevant as a way of understanding the Yemeni conflict. The Houthis are Zaydis, but they are fighting with Ali Abdullah Saleh, the ex-deposed president of Yemen, and it's all about sharing power and resources. However, quite a lot of the Middle Eastern conflicts get derailed and take a sectarian flavor simply because there are people who are intent on making them sectarian, because religious conflicts are very difficult. They sort of arouse emotions. They make people passionate. If you talk about these conflicts as if they are conflicts about sharing resources, about sharing limited resources sometimes, such as in the case of Yemen, and also sharing power, people want to have a stake in the system. And if they are marginalized or expelled from the system and the benefits, then they're going to stage a rebellion. And this is exactly what happened in Yemen. As a result, foreign intervention, the Saudis and the UAE, let's not forget that other Gulf countries are helping the Saudis. There are 10 countries in the coalition in this war in Yemen, but of course the Saudis are the leaders of this war. And to think of the Yemeni conflict as a Sunni-Shia one is very, very simplistic.
Nothing lasts forever. I remember President Jimmy Carter toasting the Shah of Iran in 1978, saying that Iran was an island of stability and the Shah was a great leader. Within a year, he was gone. What do you see in terms of the long term for the survival of this feudal monarchy in Saudi Arabia?
There are times when the arrangement of this absolute monarchy is not going to work. Saudi population is becoming aware of what's happening. What is actually keeping the lid on a pressure cooker is the civil wars that are raging in the Arab world. These civil wars have intimidated Saudis, who would normally call for reform, at least political reform, that doesn't topple the monarchy necessarily, but bring about some kind of citizen involvement in politics. I see some bad moment coming, but remember, Saudi Arabia is probably the country that is most supported by the U.S. The U.S. maintains a military presence in the Gulf that is ready to move and mobilize in case there is a threat to the oil fields. And this intimidates people who may actually mobilize. Also, Saudi Arabia is severely divided internally between tribal groups, and now, because of the sectarianization between Sunni and Shia, ideologically between liberal-minded Saudis and Islamists, and therefore this fragmentation prevents the development of national politics, and there are no cross-tribal or cross-ideological solidarities developing. And the Saudi regime, by inhibiting civil society, it delays the emergence of alternative leadership that could take the country to a different level, becomes a modern democratic country.
Were you born in Saudi Arabia?
I was born outside, but it was just a historical accident, and I lived in Saudi Arabia almost all my childhood and sort of teenage years, and then I went to England to study, and I remained there simply because of my writings. My books are banned in Saudi Arabia, and in fact there was an incident just a couple of years ago where a couple of human rights activists got access to my books and my articles, and they downloaded them in PDF file on their computers, and they were arrested because they established a human rights organization. And one of the charges against them, and this I'm talking here about Mohammed Libjadi, Amnesty International reported that one of the charges against him, together with another judge who was like 75-year-old judge, Suleiman Rushudi, was that they had read my books and articles and had them downloaded on their computer screens. So in a way, it's a very difficult situation for Saudi activists to have access and also be supported, especially at this moment when repression is on the rise.
And do you have family in the country, and can you go back?
I can't go back myself because of my writings, and also the Saudi government withdrew my nationality in 2005 because I went on television and criticized the decision of the government not to include women in the municipal election as voters and candidates.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
You were just listening to an interview with Madawi Ar-Rashid on Saudi Arabia, history and politics. I talked with her at the University of Denver. Madawi Ar-Rashid is a leading scholar on Saudi Arabia. She's visiting professor at the Middle East Center at the London School of Economics and the author of A History of Saudi Arabia and a Most Masculine State. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and part of the nonprofit media education organization, Rise Up. We are supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature progressive voices rarely heard in the media, such as Rami Khoury, Vandana Shiva, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Arundhati Roy, Chris Hedges, and Tariq Ali. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs, MP3s, or written transcripts of today's program, Madawi Ar-Rashid on Saudi Arabia, History and Politics, call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our website, alternativeradio.org. Special thanks to Nader Hashmi. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell here with Fortunato.
Hey.
And we are glad to be here to ask you to join up. Here's another number to add to the other ones. And this one I hope will stick because we've repeated it before. It's 877-552-66. You're listening because you care about using information to promote understanding to create a better world. And that's what we do here at KBOO when we are doing public affairs. We're hoping for that directly, and that's a very democratic sentiment. We want informed, transparent participation, and we're just going to push out the truth until it happens, and you can join us in our effort. I'd say it's more important now than ever. The number is 877-552-66. I would like to ask you to call up, spend 3 minutes on the phone, let us fill out a triplicate a carbon copy form. We don't have a computer in front of us. We're just waiting for your call. When you hear that phone ring, it's really the phone ringing. There's a bit of a delay, but you'll hear it. And we get happy when we hear that phone ring, and we would love to have you join up right now. If you can afford $25 a month, if you got 25 bucks left in your bank account this month, you will next month, you can get the KBOO hoodie, and I think you will enjoy having that because it may be warm right now, but it's going to be quite cool at night, and you're going to need your zip-up hoodie. This is the handiest thing. It's black, it goes with everything, and it has the KBOO logo on it, and this is the only way you can get it. We have your size, 877-500-5266, right?
Yeah, we're talking to you out there who's been listening to KBOO for quite a while, and we'd like you to consider becoming finally stepping up and becoming a member. And then if you are a member, maybe consider increasing your membership, like you're doing $25, maybe, no, $28, $30 a month. And it goes to key programs like we're listening to today, the shows where you're going to go, hey, I learned this thing on KBOO. It's really explained a lot about the background of Saudi Arabia that we just listened to. And we're going to have more programming coming up, and we can only keep doing that by having listeners supported. We're not part of any institution or university or government program or anything. We're totally independent, and we're reliant on the listeners to help pay for the operating fees and the salaries for the people and for the acquisition of programs like Alternative Radio, which we just heard from Denver, Colorado. And there's also programs from Pacifica that we listen to, and Democracy Now! That we're able to present folks. And we do that with the money that you send in. So give us a call, 877-500 5266, or you can donate online. You're not going to talk to anybody, but you can go to kboo.fm/give, and you can become a member. We can take have a small amount taken out of your checking account, unless you want to pay the whole amount. That'd be good, but if it's like a strain to do that, we can work out a payment arrangement. And so, like, even if you're going to do like $5-$10 a month, if you're still going to have the full amount, you can get the hoodie or the T-shirts, or any of the other thank you gifts that we've got here at KBOO. So it all starts with you picking up the phone and calling us up, 877-500-5266.
That's you making that leap. You know, I think that KBOO, ironically, after nearly 50 years, is on the verge of a Boo explosion because, you know, KBOO is named after Berkeley Boo, back from the bad old days when you had to go see a smuggler to get your refreshment, and you can.
That's
light
one
it
of
up.
The stories. That's, one of the many stories.
Well, that is the story, and you can join us 877-500-5266. I know a lot of you are doing better than you realize because of the marijuana economy, and so a shout out to you if you're doing all right with that cash economy. Kick some down, 877-500-5266. And we need your call right now, and that's got to be you. Here's the number one more time, 877-500-5266.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Hedges takes a provocative look at the current state of revolt in the United States and will recount the U.S.'s continuing history of domestic terrorism while outlining ways for communities to resist before it's too late. Again, that's Chris Hedges, Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up on the Boo at 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on stage and studio, D-May Roberts welcomes Grimm star Reggie Lee, who's returning to the stage as Sancho Panza in Man of La Mancha. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan looks at the Portland Art Museum's retrospective Quest for Beauty, the architecture, landscapes, and collections of John Yeon. We are in our membership drive. Call 877-500 KBOO 5266 to become a member of this great station. And now coming up is Air Cascadia.